I need to ask a quick favor of you. As a lot of y'all know, at the top of next year, I have a book entitled Theologizing Bigger dropping. In anticipation of that book, I have to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can to launch that book successfully when the time comes. And one of the ways I'm doing that is by rolling some things out through my newsletter. Now, if you could subscribe to my newsletter, that would be a huge help for me. And it won't cost you a thing unless you really want to support, and there's an option to do that too. You can do that at pastortrey05.substack.com. Once again, that's pastortrey05.substack.com. And as an added bonus, you might even like some of the stuff you see being posted over there. So if you're not a hater, go ahead and sign up for that. Invite a friend to do it, and we're going to have us a mighty good time. Back to our regularly scheduled programming. Ah, beloved, I'm Pastor Trey, and you're now listening to the New Living Translation. This is bona fide Bible talk, because God speaks my language too, and I'm sure enough about to act like it. Let's go. In this season of the New Living Translation, we've been dealing with this idea of love as an act of liberation. And typically, I've honed in on passages that deal with horizontal relationships between people and what loving might look like, and the vertical relationship between humanity and Creator, us and the divine, what love looks like in that regard. But this episode, I want to take a look at what loving a text or a tradition or even an interpretation might look like and how that might liberate us. You are now listening to the New Living Translation. The tagline of the podcast is Bonafide Bible Talk with Pastor Trey. Every episode, I'm talking about the Bible, this collection of ancient sacred texts written thousands of years ago in some cases. Texts that are all written in different languages, whether that language be Hebrew or Aramaic or Greek, whether that be a Latin translation of those ancient languages. Sometimes the text that we're dealing with is a translation of a translation. Like a lot of the quotations that we find in the New Testament are based on Greek translations of Hebrew writings in the Hebrew Bible or the Christian Old Testament. And the fact that we're dealing with translations and translations of translations and all of these new massagings of these very ancient texts and ancient stories speaks to the reverence that so many communities have for these texts, for these writings, and for these stories. Now, reverence is not a bad thing, but I can't speak for anybody else. Me personally, there is a time when we revere something so much that we sort of end up erasing some of its personality, right? Have you ever thought about the fact that there are some people that we revere so much or idolize so much that we forget that they breathe the same air that we do? And in a similar vein, one of the things that I like to do with the New Living Translation is make the Bible more personal to us, help it to speak our language, because there are times that we forget that this is ultimately a text, that these are ultimately writings and stories that are meant to make us feel things. A lot of people lean on these texts to point them toward God, and that is a good thing. But in that process, sometimes we miss opportunities to enjoy stories or poems or speeches or sermons for what they are, which is a gathering of words that's meant to make you feel things, a range of emotions. Sometimes these words can help us work through our anger or our sadness or our grief. Sometimes these words can bring us joy. Sometimes these words can help us make sense of our erotic urges. Sometimes these words can make us laugh. Now, that doesn't mean that they're any less potent in their ability to point us to God. Because if the central claim of Christianity is true and God's desire is to live among creation, so much so that God puts on humanity in the person of Jesus, then we have to leave room for the fact that God actually expects us to feel things across the whole range of emotions. And it would make sense then that this library of theological writings would include writings that range from deep, thought-provoking, to downright absurd. And so on this edition of the New Living Translation, we're going to have us some bona fide Bible talk about Genesis chapter 27. Let's get into it. So this is how it happened. Isaac was so old, he couldn't even see no more. He sent for his oldest son, Esau. He said,
"Yo, son."
Esau said,
"Yo."
Then Isaac said,
"Look, I'm old. I'm gonna probably die soon. So this is what I want you to do. Go get the stick, your bow, your arrow, all that stuff. Get outside and hunt me something good. Then whip it up real good how I like it. And bring it to me so I can get my grub on at least one more time. And bless you for real before I die."
Now, Rebecca was out here eavesdropping when Isaac was talking to his son Esau. And Esau went outside to find something good to hunt. Then Rebecca went to her son Jacob and said,
"I sure enough heard your daddy talking to your brother saying, go hunt me something good and whip it up real good so I can bless you in front of God before I die. So here's the play. Just go to our flock right now and bring me two of the best little baby goats, and I'm gonna whip them up just how we like it. Then you're gonna take it to him so he can eat it and bless you before he dies."
Jacob said to his mama Rebecca,
"Now how that supposed to work? Esau hairy as heck and I'm baby bottom smooth. What you gonna do if daddy feel me? Then he gonna think I'm trying to play him and he ain't gonna bless me. He gonna cuss me out."
But his mama said,
"Let him cuss me out then. Just do what I said and go get them goats."
So he went, got them goats and brought them to his mama. She whipped them up just like his daddy liked it. Rebecca took some of her oldest son Esau's best clothes she had in the house with her and made her younger son Jacob wear them. And then she took some of the goat hair and put them on his hands and his neck. And she took that food she whipped up, some bread she just made, and gave it to Jacob, her baby boy. So he went to his daddy and said,
"I'm here, daddy."
And Isaac said,
"Now, son, which one is you?"
Jacob said to his daddy,
I'm Esau, the oldest one. I did just like you said. Now, get up and go ahead and eat, please. I'm ready for my blessing."
But Isaac said,
"Now how you went and hunted me something to whip it up so fast?"
And Jacob said,
"Cause your God brought it to me."
And Isaac said,
"Come here real quick. Let me feel your skin and see if you Esau for real."
So Jacob went near Isaac. And Isaac felt him. And said,
"You sure enough sound like Jacob. But your hand feel like Esau."
He ain't recognize him because his hands felt hairy as heck like his brother Esau's. So he blessed him. He said,
"Esau, this you for real?"
Jacob said,
"Yep, that's me."
He said,
"Well, bring my food over here so I can eat this grub you got for me and bless you."
So Jacob brought the food over and Isaac ate. He brought him wine and Isaac drank. And Isaac said to him,
"Well, come here. Give me a kiss."
Jacob got close and kissed him. And Isaac smelled that stank on him. And then he blessed him. He said,
"You sure enough smell like outside. The outside God made and called good. So God gonna give you the midst of the heavens and the thickness of the earth and all the food and drink you need. Whole nation's gonna pay homage to you and serve you. You gonna rule over your brothers and your mama kids gonna bow in front of you. Anyone who wish you wrong, gonna get done wrong. Anyone who do right by you, gonna get done right."
Now, as soon as Isaac finished giving this blessing, like Jacob had barely left the room, his brother Esau finally came in from hunting. And he whipped it up real good, too. He brought it to his daddy and said, "Get up and go ahead and eat, please. I'm ready for my blessing." And Isaac said,
"Now, which one is you?"
And Esau said, "I'm Esau, the oldest." Now, Isaac started shaking. He said,
"Then who just brought me that food? I done ate it all already before you got here, and I blessed him. He gonna be blessed, too."
Now, when Esau heard that, he started shouting and crying.
"Daddy, you better bless me, too."
Isaac said,
"Yo, shady little brother and took your blessing."
And Esau said, "That's why everybody called him Jake the Snake.
This the second time he done pulled some mess like this. He took my birthright and my blessing, and you ain't even saved no blessing for me? Isaac said,
Nah, I already said he was going to be the boss of you, and I already said all his brothers would serve him. A whole bunch of food and drink. What I got left to bless you with, son?
And Esau said, So what? You only got one blessing? You better bless me too, Daddy. And Esau was just shouting and crying. And Isaac said,
Look, you're not going to live off the thickness of the earth or the midst of the heaven. You're going to have to fight to survive. Your brother going to sun you till you finally get tired of it and get his boot off your neck.
So Esau hated Jacob from that point on, because their daddy gave Jacob the good part. Esau said to himself, My daddy going to die soon. And then, I'm going to kill my brother.
All right, can we admit that this story is absurd? Now, when I say absurd, I'm not calling into question the historicity of this story. That is not what is up for discussion right now. That is a conversation for you, God, biblical scholars, archaeology, whatever else you want to bring into that conversation. But that's not where we at right now. I'm talking about the fact that this is bananas. Like, they deceived an old blind man into believing that one of his sons was another one of his sons, intentionally so, down to putting on odorous clothing and animal fur so that the senses would be tricked and deceived. And the whole time, Isaac is present enough to be like, you don't really sound like Esau. Okay, I don't know how this worked out, because I just sent you to go and hunt me some game and prepare a meal. Why is this food piping hot right now so soon? And Isaac is there the whole time. The level of deception here is meant, I believe, to point us toward absurdity. This story is told in a way that is amusing. It's meant to grab our attention. It's meant to hold it there. And I think that there are times when in our rush to revere these words, stand at the reading of scripture, and to make sure that we don't mishandle the word, that we sometimes miss the dope parts of these stories, the parts of these stories that are meant to make us feel things, the parts of these stories that are meant to draw us in, the parts of these stories that are meant to help us remember them. You see, this story is important because it helps explain the origins of some of the enmity between Israel, the people of Israel, and some of their neighbors. Genesis goes on to tell us that Esau becomes the ancestor of Edom, the Edomites, who are Israel's neighbors to the east at a point in history. They're not always on the friendliest of terms, but this story tells us that their ancestors were actually twin brothers, and that the enmity comes from the fact that there was deception, that there was favoritism, that there was a plot to deprive somebody of what was at one point rightfully theirs. Even if the favor of God comes as a result of that deception. You see, this story isn't meant to be neat. It's not meant to be sanitized. It's not meant to make you feel good. It's meant to make you feel something, to draw you in and explain a complexity. And in my opinion, it's only when we get to a point of being able to open up these Bibles, this sacred collection of words and writings meant to point us toward the creator of heaven and earth. Only when we give ourselves permission to open up this book and say, what in the world is going on here, do we get to scratch the full potential of what this book can do for us. One of the things that loving somebody or something requires you to do is to learn about who that person or that thing actually is. If I claim to love someone and I'm continually trying to transform them into who I'd like them to be, instead of learning and appreciating to an extent who they are, then I'm not really loving that person. I've developed something of a paternalistic or patronizing relationship with that person. In a similar vein, if we're to love these texts, then we have to learn about them on their own terms. There are so many times when we try to force the Bible to fit our own conceptions of what it is, and we develop doctrines to explain what the Bible is, and doctrines that may not actually be found in the Bible at times. But sometimes if we sit with the text long enough, it will reveal itself to be potent enough on its own terms. There are parts of the Bible that might make you shed tears of joy. There are parts of the Bible that might point you toward wonder. There are parts of the Bible that might make you mad, make you question the character of God. And there are parts of the Bible that are so absurd, they seem like they might have came out of a Saturday Night Live writer's room. And if you ask me, I think that's kind of dope. I love that in this collection of sacred texts, there is so much room to feel things. There is so much room to have all of your emotions stimulated. And so in this absurd story about how Jacob gets the favor and the blessing of his father in the very presence of God, we learn that sometimes it ain't got nothing to do with how good you is. Sometimes messy people get rewarded. That's not usually the Sunday school lesson we want to leave our children with, but it is a story that is in the Bible. Now, if there's any good news, is that eventually Jacob does have a confrontation with God that forces him to walk a little bit differently. Just because a story is in the Bible does not make it the story of the Bible. And so my hope is that when we let these stories speak for themselves, we would gain an appreciation for the actual writing and the stories of the Bible on their own terms. Because I think in loving the text that way, there's liberation to be found. Let me pray with you. Almighty Creator, we thank you that part of the way that you reveal yourself is through stories. Good stories, scary stories, heavy stories, absurd stories, stories that make us feel things. And now, God, we ask that you might open our eyes to the stories that you are writing in real time so that we are better equipped to love like you do. Amen. Translation is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. You can follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. That's the number three, not spelled out, Black Men. You can find me on all social media platforms at Pastor Trey 05. That's Pastor Trey 05. Don't send me no Facebook requests, though. Like, I don't be over there. That's the bad place. This work has been made possible by a community of folks who've chosen to show their support through generosity. You can join us at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Spell three out that time, though. patreon.com/threeblackmen. There you can find even more original content from Sam, Rob, and yours truly. Make sure you subscribe to, rate, and review the New Living Translation and Three Black Men wherever you get your podcast. And remember, real recognize real. Don't get caught looking unfamiliar.